Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Radiolab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich. And
today on the show, 14 meditations. 11 meditations on the moment of death and what happens after.
Now number 8.
9.
A title which simply escapes me. Booyah, Mozart.
From producer Lulu Miller.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So I called up this guy at the University of Leicester.
Jan Zalashevich. I'm a geologist who basically works on Earth history.
By day. But in his spare time, he's been studying what he calls...
future fossils.
Like, let's go ahead, 100 million years.
Which is roughly the time that separates us from the dinosaurs. We will be dead. All the species that are around us will be dead.
So I asked him, will any of our stuff, the books we write, the buildings we make, will any of that still be here? And here's what he found.
Concrete is probably going to preserve pretty well. Glass will preserve, but it will probably turn opaque. Bits of brickwork, corroded piping, some types of plastic, and our rubbish dumps all stand a pretty good chance of being preserved.
What about paper? Do we know about that?
Paper is, again, we can treat that paper as plant material. It will carbonize. Just as when we see fossil plants, they can be preserved for tens or even hundreds of millions of years. So the shape of paper will be preserved almost forever. But the print on paper will almost certainly be lost. If you have a book preserved, it will be like a little piece of oblong coal. So the ideas that we produce, that I cannot see surviving us. Hmm. You know, so Shakespeare and Goethe and all the people we call the immortals, you know, Mozart, music.
Right.
That information, I think, will be lost forever.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Cyberternity. It's a word of our own coinage. Cyberternity.
And it comes to us from producer Emily Voigt.
This story is about dealing with death in a world where no one really dies. At the center of the story is a guy named Wyatt Ammon.
I knew Wyatt, and I'd consider him my best friend.
That's Donald Dover.
Wyatt and I both had office jobs at the same time, and together we decided that this wasn't enough because both of us were spending so much time in front of computers. So the goal was going to be to join the Peace Corps, and we had talked about joining the Peace Corps together.
But Wyatt got things going first. He quits his job, he signs up for the Peace Corps, and within a few months was headed off to Zambia.
He called me to see him off, and we sat there and sat there and sat there, sort of avoiding the fact that he was going to actually have to leave. Finally, he was like, all right, you need to go home. I need to get on a plane. So he walked me to my car and gave me a big hug. And he said, yeah. He said, you've been a great friend to me, Donald. I said, yeah, you too. And he said, don't worry. I'll be back in 2 years. Nobody's going to die.
But 10 weeks into the trip, Wyatt was hanging out with some friends on the fourth floor of a hotel, and he leaned back against a window, almost floor to ceiling, and the plate glass gave out. He fell 4 stories, and he bled to death. His lungs filled with blood. He never regained consciousness.
When the Peace Corps called, I just said, I don't believe it. Who is this? What kind of sick thing are you doing?
This is Jeannie Ammon, Wyatt's mom.
He said, fatal injuries. I said, what do you mean fatal? What does fatal mean? I couldn't, my mind would not comprehend what that word meant. I felt so betrayed by God. I'd prayed for Wyatt and had felt that God would keep him safe. And, you know, it isn't, it's such a crock.
So 2 years go by. And right at the time that Wyatt would have been returning from the Peace Corps, something happened. Jeannie, can you tell me about getting the letter?
Yeah. I remember so clearly, Greg and I were both home, and we went to the mailbox and walked to the kitchen, and we ripped open the envelope. And
inside was a letter from Wyatt.
We were really unsure what was going on. It's hard to describe. It was really incredible.
So what happened is this. Before Wyatt died, he had been playing around on the internet, and he went to this site called Future Me, a website where you can send a letter to your future self. Wyatt wrote his right before he joined the Peace Corps, and the idea was the site would hold on to it and email it back to him in 2 years. But of course, Wyatt wasn't there to get the letter. But Donald, his friend, found it and sent it to Jeannie.
And so Greg and I both stood there at the counter and we read the letter. Okay.
So what did it say?
Dear Future Me, I'm leaving D.C. So far, I've managed to do pretty much everything other than what I needed to do.
You know, it's about the fact that he's leaving for Zambia, first of all.
I have no idea what to expect.
And he talks about his ex-girlfriend.
Sometimes love is like crack.
How he hates his office job.
I truly believe that I was meant to be a semi-transient being.
You know, he's sort of being a little melodramatic.
I want the Sistine Chapel, not a ranch-style home in the suburbs. That letter really captured who Wyatt was. My life is my canvas. You know, with all his ramblings and these grandiose things. It's already schizophrenically colorful, intricate, and dizzyingly amorphous. He knows that he's saying too much and that he kind of has to humble himself. How pretentious is that? And that's what he was like. He was always keeping a check on himself. One thing's for sure, I'm capable of rambling on and on and on and on and on and on and on. I have the same problem. I just remember feeling... I felt like Wyatt had just sent us a letter. Greg shook his head and he said, that kid, you know, and it was like a part of him was still alive.
Emily?
Uh-huh?
Let me just interrupt for just a second.
Okay.
Because it would be easy to hear the story as just like a fluke. Like a letter shows up from a kid who died and look what it means to the mom and his friend. But no, this might be where we're all headed. Because the internet, you know, it's always on. And one of the things that's happening is that there are sites that are popping up that allow people to speak from beyond the grave and to keep on speaking. In fact, David Eagleman, who we heard from earlier, the guy who read those stories and the neuroscientist, he started one.
So I started the company deathswitch.com.
This is a real thing.
There are hundreds of subscribers, yeah.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
The way it works is you sign up for the site and then you keep checking in with the site to prove you're alive. And if you disappear for too long,
the computer deduces you are dead.
And then it sends out all those emails that you told it to.
To your company, telling them what the passwords are, to your family, telling them where the gold is buried, or even just to remind them that you love them.
And he says that these switches, these death switches, are going off all the time.
But lots of people test the death switches to make sure that it works.
So they might not be real yet, but they will be pretty soon. So it's easy for him to imagine a letter like this.
Happy 87th birthday. It's been 22 years since my death. I hope your life is proceeding delightfully.
Which may sound funny, but imagine that that's you in the kitchen getting a letter from your mom or from someone that you lost too early. How would you feel?
It was like a part of him was still alive.
So after Jeannie gets the letter, what happens?
Well, Jeannie starts writing Wyatt as if he hadn't died.
What do you mean, writing him where?
Well, Wyatt had been a huge blogger, and Jeannie discovered that a lot of his blogs were still active. One of them was even updating his age.
It shows his age is what he'd be now. You know, it doesn't know that he's not here anymore.
So she goes on and leaves him comments.
My latest one was on November 5th this year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to read that one?
That'd be great.
Wyatt, it feels like you are still here living in Zambia, and it is 2005. I feel frantic to do something to stop the 17th from happening.
In your mind, when you comment on a blog...
Oh, Wyatt, another holiday without you.
Where do you picture that it's going?
Well, I think...
I wish you could just let me know what it is like and how you feel now.
I think I just figure it's like on a screen and somehow he's getting it.
Wyatt's dead.
For Donald, getting the letter was just a reminder of that.
Wyatt died in Zambia.
And in fact, the idea that technology could keep him around...
I guess I'm sort of...
That just didn't work for Donald.
I sort of feel the way I imagine Wyatt felt in his letter. He talks about not being static. I want to learn and grow and see how others... I want to continue moving and seeking and building and growing. And I will not rest. It can be kind of frustrating. Like he's stuck in the 24-year-old Wyatt. Before Wyatt died, we had... We decided we were Luddites, that we were anti-technology, and the hilarious part is that Wilde then Googled Luddite to find out things about Luddites. But initially the plan was to leave to meet Wyatt in Africa, and when Wyatt died, I knew that I still needed to make that break.
So we did.
I left my office job to go live on a small island in the middle of Chesapeake Bay. It's a 240-acre island, and I live there with three other people. There's no cell phone service. You won't be logging onto the internet.
He's sure Wyatt would have loved it there.
And 11. Goodbye. Here's Peter Ward, a paleontologist and professor of biology and Earth and space sciences at the University of Washington.
In 7 billion years, our sun will suddenly go red giant. And the Earth is just burned to a crisp.
Does that happen like one morning, or does that happen over several hundred years, or?
Yeah, it's going to actually take a few thousand years, but the oceans will have been actually long gone. The oceans are going away in 2 billion years.
Oh, dear.
Because the sun, that nasty old sun, just keeps getting brighter and brighter and brighter, and about 50 to 60 centigrade, we start rapidly losing the ocean to space.
This is the opposite of Noah's flood. Instead of the gas descending into the giant oceans, now the oceans pick up and go back into the sky.
Exactly.
And then things get worse from there, because 5 billion years after the oceans are gone, the sun starts to expand. Then it happens in pulses.
There are actually 4 to 5 pulses that are going to take place. The first 4 pulses will not eat up the Earth, but it will certainly sterilize it. The whole surface will melt. It will be glowing. The last one, the sun just keeps expanding. Our sun will expand beyond, almost to the orbit of Mars. And so the Earth is totally gone. I mean, it just gets snuffed out. But the nice thing is that Europa will become the new Maui.
Oh, really?
Yes, Jovian satellites. If you buy real estate there now here's dirt cheap. That will be the tropics.
Jovian moons.
Jovian moons.
How many are candidates for Mauis?
There's Europa and Ganymede and Io, not so much.
But isn't Europa, when the ice melts on Europa, isn't it an all watery?
It's just going to be a nice warm ocean.
Would just be a ball of water?
Ball of water. 100-mile deep water, too, at that.
That's regular liquid water, H2O?
Yes. Oh, it's beautiful stuff. Think of the view. Think of the views of Jupiter. That would be so spectacular. The downside with these Jovian moons is that you couldn't breathe there.
What, you left that out?
Minor detail. You can't breathe it. But I mean, that you could certainly go water skiing. You just have a little respirator on.
Oh, that was a small little asterisk.
Oh,
just
come
landed.
On now. Just compared to the end of the world, that's minor detail.
I see. All right, so now let's go further out. At what point does any possibility of solar system existence end?
That one's tougher. That one's very tough because after the red giant, we become a M-class or a dwarf.
Which means the sun, after being this big, now expanding red star, red giant, sinks back into itself and becomes much, much, much smaller and much, much cooler. So Europa, our little paradise, now freezes.
Exactly.
And then the only thing left is things like Voyager, things that you you sent off that are still going off somewhere. Bits of us.
They're going and going and going and gone, and the chance that they'll ever intersect a star is very small.
The end.
The end. Now, the final end, of course, is way off into the future. Because the universe keeps expanding, that means eventually atoms themselves get pulled apart. Little protons and neutrons, they get ripped away from one another. And we're somewhere else, something else, somehow else.
Yeah, and then everything that is, isn't.
Exactly.
Oh.
Goodbye. Oh, goodbye.
Goodbye, proton.
Goodbye, neutron.
Goodbye, Robert Krowich.
Goodbye, Jada Boomrod.
Goodbye, everyone.
Hello, this is John Troyer from the Center for Death and Society. Radiolab is produced by Lulu Miller and Jada Murad. Our staff includes Ellen Horn, Zoran Wheeler, Jonathan Mitchell,
and Amanda Aronsick, with help from Jessica Benko, Katie Sewell, Charles Choi,
Emma Jacobs, and Ike Sriskandaraja. Special thanks to Jeffrey Tambor, Richard Hake, Rex Stone, and
Vicky Merrick, Fran Ailes, and Elizabeth Shore. I will see you all on the other side.
Radiolab is supported by the one and only Planetary Society. Co-founded by Carl Sagan and led today by Bill Nye, the Planetary Society is a global nonprofit that exists for anyone to take a role in advancing space exploration. When you become a member, you join their mission to explore worlds, find life off Earth, and protect our planet from dangerous asteroids. Anyone can join. Find your place in space and become a member today at planetary.org/radiolab.